Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, July 31st, 2020. Producing from ESPN in Bristol, Troy Farkas. Sunbuster only working from my home studio in New York. Think about this. Today would normally be trade deadline day. We'd be getting texts. We'd be hearing about teams, talking about deals. A lot of players would be moving. But it's 2020, and we're still very early in the season. And the first impression that we have so far is that Shane Bieber is now in the conversation along with Gerrit Cole and Jacob deGrom for the best pitcher on the planet. He was ridiculous against the Twins last night.
Oof, that was nasty from Bieber. Bieber with a 2-2. There's the curveball again, and he strikes out a pair. The outside corner, three perfect pitches.
Adam Amin, her old friend, and A.J. Pierzynski, that was A.J. laughing, is watching the Twins try to hit against Bieber last night. Troy, I don't know if you saw much of that game. Good Lord, he was so good.
He was very good. I saw some of the highlights. It'll be interesting in a truncated season, Cy Young voting, if, you know, how many good quality starts it'll take for you to secure the Cy Young. Obviously, he's going to have great competition with Gerrit Cole because he's dealing already, but Bieber, early front runner, perhaps.
Yeah, and I think actually in a shortened season, there's a better chance for starting pitchers to be an MVP. Like if Shane Bieber just rolls through this short season, he's going to be in the conversation for MVP, especially with the Indians really playing well. They beat the Twins last night. The Yankees and the Orioles, and the mismatch continued.
And that one's drilled to left field. There it goes! See ya! A three-run home run for Judge, and the Yankees come back, and they lead this one 8-6.
So they win that game. Troy, did you hear our old friend Aaron Boone scream in the background at the sound of that contact?
Yes, that is the great thing about the no fans. You can hear all the sounds coming from the dugout, and from what we gathered last year from John Boy and Aaron Boone's famous rant, he's very animated, so I love hearing from him.
Very animated. The early MVP in the American League, if it's not Shane Bieber, maybe it's Christian Vasquez.
He swings and drives one in the air, left center field. Hit deep, back goes Davis, back to the wall. He's done it again. Another home run for Christian Vasquez, his third of the year. He hit a career-high 23 last year as he hit that 2-1 pitch out.
1-1 to Vasquez, swinging a high fly into left field. Did he get enough of it? Back at the track, Davis right in front of the wall. Davis looks up, he leaps, and it is gone. Christian wow. Vasquez does it again. A solo homer, two-run shot, and it is 3-2 Boston.
That sound from WEEI. So the Red Sox beat the Mets again last night with their bullpen holding on at the end again. The Padres were in San Francisco. San Diego, one of the most exciting teams early in the season, and they erupted in the 10th inning.
Start with a runner at second, and that runner made the final out the inning previous, and it was Trent Grisham flying out to right field that ended the ninth. On the ground, and by the dive of the second baseman, Solano. Coming around from second base is Grisham. The throw is off the mark. And the Padres take the lead 7-6 here in the 10th. Greg Garcia, who is going to pinch hit. Here is a liner into right field and a base hit. Machado will score. Here comes Tommy Pham. He is in. Two more runs for the Padres. San Diego on top now 9-6. Greg Garcia with a pinch hit. Two-run single to right field.
And they would score six runs in the 10th inning. That, the sound of the great Don Arcillo on Fox Sports San Diego. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts talked to reporters for the first time since the suspension came down for Major League Baseball for Joe Kelly and for Roberts. And he called the 8-game suspension for Kelly too aggressive. And he said he completely agrees with Kelly's decision to appeal. Dodgers outfielder A.J. Pollock said he believed the suspension to be very, very harsh. The quote from Pollock, I don't think anyone's too happy about it. It's not our call. It's obviously the commissioner's call, but I don't think anyone's too happy about that. I just don't think it's a very good feel on his end. The Philadelphia Phillies canceled all activities at Citizens Bank Park on Thursday, and they had their weekend series against the Toronto Blue Jays postponed after a member of the coaching staff and a member of the home clubhouse staff tested positive for coronavirus, the team announced on Thursday. Some players were around the coach who tested positive on Wednesday, and so yesterday they were told to isolate. As it stands now, The Phillies' next game would be sometime next week, maybe Tuesday. They've said that no player has tested positive yet. Another Marlin tested positive. That brings the total in players and staff to 19. So about two-thirds of their traveling party, which is a remarkable number. Major League Baseball and the Players Association agreed to 7 innings doubleheader. That, according to Jeff Passan, something that we started talking about in spring training. And Mike Trout, whose wife Jessica is scheduled to give birth to the couple's first child this summer, was placed on the paternity leave list by the Los Angeles Angels on Thursday. He'll have some protocol to go through as he returns to the team after their baby is born. Before we begin today's show and talk to Jessica Mendoza and Todd Radom, of course, baseball is back. The NBA returned last night, and then this weekend, we've got golf's first major of the season. And guess what? You can get exclusive coverage of the PGA Championship August 6th or 9th on ESPN and ESPN+. And since a lot of you out there are probably missing golf, we at ESPN Audio teamed up with our friends at the PGA to give you all something big to look forward to in 2021. This is your chance to win a VIP experience to the 2021 PGA Championship at the world-class Kiawa Island Golf Resort. The four-day, three-night grand prize package includes round-trip air and hotel at the Sanctuary, a five-star oceanfront hotel on the island, two tickets to the PGA Chalet and two pairs of Wanamaker Club tickets, two free one-year-long subscriptions to ESPN+, where you can stream live coverage of featured holes every weekend. Win a year of exclusive live sports, originals, and more with ESPN+. For your chance to win, go to www.ESPNRadioSweeps.com to enter now through August 11th. Limit to one entry, one grand prize winner will be selected. Visit www.ESPNRadioSweeps.com for official rules. Jessica Mendoza covers baseball for ESPN. She's an analyst. You see her on television all over the place. And Jess, you know, I heard you doing a KBO game the other day, and it really surprised me where you made reference to the Mendoza line, and you did it without any, without a hint of irony. That was impressive.
It felt weird coming out of my mouth because, to be honest, I usually never reference it just because I've always, like, not really liked it. So the fact, you're right, it came out of my mouth in just such a normal way. And, of course, Jason Benetti had to call me out and be like, wait a second. You just said that without even a hesitation of the fact that it's also your last name.
Exactly. All right. So I had this nice long list of questions, and a lot of them were going to be about baseball. But just before we went on with you, news began to break that tonight the Brewers-Cardinals game has been postponed because reportedly the Cardinals have some positive tests. You know, I've confirmed this. This is accurate. The game tonight is postponed. After what we saw with the Marlins and Phillies over the weekend, Jess, it seems like that Major League Baseball is learning from its past mistake. And when they get these little things that sprout up, jump in, isolate right away. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the mistake we're now seeing is everyone's going back to the Sunday game, the Marlins versus the Phillies, and now that there have been two positive tests of staff members with the Phillies, it just, whether it is connected or not, no one knows, but the fact is it goes back to, should that game have been played? We've heard Phillies players, even manager Joe Girardi, talk about if he could go back, he would definitely not play that game. That's the message that's clearly being sent now. And honestly, should have been a long time ago.
Yeah, 100%. And it's interesting because since that happened on Sunday, I really feel like that you're starting to see the players flex their muscles and begin to. And I thought about this because I know athletes like yourself. I'm like, you know what? This is kind of becoming a competition for the players where most of the teams that I talk to, most of the players I talk to, they're feeling like, OK, we got this. We're trying to make this work. We're trying to do everything we can to make this happen. And much in the same way that, you know, a teammate would call out another teammate for running out of ground ball, players are getting more comfortable citing problems that they recognize. You know, privately, there's a lot of anger directed toward the Marlins. It's almost like, wait, those young guys couldn't figure it out. And then yesterday we saw that tweet from Anthony Rizzo where he basically was challenging Major League Baseball to clean up that sliver of the health and safety protocol. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, just seeing so many players being outspoken. We saw it earlier in the season with the Astros cheating scandal, with players even such as Mike Trout that you never hear from, Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger, you know, calling them out, whether it was the ring and wanting them to turn it back in, whether it was just the fact that Judge should have won the MVP over Altuve, just this outspoken nature. And now we're seeing it everywhere from Andrew McCutchen. You know, he even voiced his opinion on finding out things via social media. That's how he found out his games were canceled this week. Anthony Rizzo, the most recent tweet, obviously the most loud spoken, with David Price's calling out MLB as they're really putting the players first. I like that we are hearing from the players. Whether you agree with what they have to say or not is a moot point, in my opinion. It's more about we need their voices. We need to know and hear how they're feeling. And it's something that's always been hindered, especially like social media. You really, comparatively to NBA, NFL, very much a lack of interaction and voice from our Major League Baseball players. And I'm glad that we're getting their voices now.
Why? What? Why are you glad? Because I actually think it's cool, because I think in this situation with the players, especially the coronavirus, you know, they have more risk than anybody. And I respect the fact that they're like, hey, we're on the front lines here, and you're going to do it the way we want to do it. Rob Manfred, you know, baseball owners, you can't make us play.
Yeah, that's why I'm glad we're hearing from them. In the past, Buster, you know this better than anybody, they would have been quiet. You know, they might have had a voice within the Players Association. They might have, you know, called other teammates, maybe even spoken to you. But as far as publicly putting it out there on Twitter, on Instagram, wherever it might be, hey, MLB, hashtag, whatever it is, I'm calling you out. Are you thinking of us first? Where do we stand in this entire thing? It's important we hear their voices. And I know it's taken a long time, but I love, and again, whether you agree with what they have to say or not, their voice matters, and now we're hearing it.
As part of this, we got word last night that the official confirmation of something we've actually been talking about since March, 7-inning doubleheaders are coming up, and that rule will go into effect in classic 2020 style, agreed to on Thursday night, goes into effect on Saturday. They're making it up as they go, which they have to under the circumstances. How do you feel about this?
I absolutely love it. I mean, this is my game. I understand the 7-inning game. It's the game that I come from in softball, but mostly just the doubleheader component. It's not so much 7 innings as it is 14 compared to 18 if you were playing 2 9-inning doubleheader games. And in this time when you're looking at, I mean, I had a game the other day, Buster, where just the bullpen arms were already tired from the Oakland A's. And it was crazy when you were thinking about only 5 games into the season, but how we're seeing a lot of these arms being tapped, because why? Every game matters. I mean, it was, I saw Jesus Luzardo come in for 4 innings to close out a game against the Rockies. I mean, this is like, again, his second game of the season, and it's already, hey, we're going with everybody. So when you think about games getting postponed, games getting canceled, which as we're seeing is going to happen more and more and more, the doubleheaders are going to increase. And I just think, for every player to be able to remain as healthy as possible, 7 innings is absolutely the way to go.
What I'm hearing at the team level is that they are, you know, in favor of the 7-inning rule because they're worried about the stress being put on the pitchers in this weird year of preparation, this erratic preparation. During the shutdown, I remember having conversations with managers and coaches, and they were trying to figure out the magic formula, like when to get these guys ramped up, when to have them do less. Last weekend, I had a conversation with Carl Willis, the pitching coach of the Cleveland Indians, and he ran through their strategy where at one point they did kind of pull the reins back on the pitchers as the shutdown was going on. And then about June 10th, they basically told the pitchers, look, we don't know if we're going to play this year, but this needs to be a year in which you move forward. We don't want to have you not throw this year if we wind up getting shut down. And then next year, everyone's on a 100-inning limit because they had this odd 2020 season. So they got back to the regular preparation. And before we get to talking about Shane Bieber specifically, man, it feels like the Indians figured this out. Like, whatever they did, it's almost like every other team should learn from what the Indians did.
Absolutely. And it's early, and I think that'll be the biggest thing, is where we're at a month from now and where these pitchers are. But the fact that all of them throwing 6 innings plus, I mean, just the amount. I love it. I love it for the game. I think the pitchers love it as well, just knowing, hey, we're going to hand you the ball, and you're just going to go. And we're not going to come in because of a pitch count. We're not going to come in because we're trying to reserve you for what could happen in 2 weeks. But like I said, I mean, let's see how this looks later in the season. I'm hoping it looks phenomenal so we can get back to where pitchers are throwing deep in the game and saving. I just talked about how much the bullpen arm's already getting taxed because we're seeing guys come out in the third inning, fourth inning consistently. And I'd say even more so this year, Buster, with the expanded rosters, because there's so many more arms now in the bullpen, I think the idea is let's get to that bullpen and start using these guys.
All right, specifically on Shane Bieber, what Carl Willis told me was is that last year, and this is someone who was drafted and considered to be, a decent prospect, and then he just kept getting better. He had that great slider when he started, and then his fastball got better, and then he added a curveball, and Carl told me added a cutter. And then Carl told me that last year he began to work a lot more on his changeup, and now he's putting it all together to a degree that I kind of wonder, as we have this conversation about who the best pitcher on the planet is, Gerrit Cole is in that conversation. Jacob DeGrom is in that conversation. Shane Bieber, I think, is in that conversation. What do you think?
Absolutely. The 14 strikeouts he showcased that opening day. You can talk about all the pitches he has, but it's the conviction he throws them. And, watching him last year and just kind of seeing the emergence, I feel like there's been a shift and even more confidence and more. And this is where, Buster, I wish we were at the field to kind of talk to him and kind of find out what happened this offseason, not only with the pitches he's added, but just the way he's throwing them. I mean, that's what stood out to me so much in opening day with the strikeouts, the way he was so dominant. But there was something about his posture, the way that he just went to things. And it didn't matter if he was throwing his changeup to righties or lefties. He just threw it with that conviction that unfortunately you don't see as much, especially with younger pitchers. It feels like it takes till they get to like the Max Scherzer level, the Justin Verlander level, where you see pitchers as they age, almost that conviction grow and grow and grow. For Shane Bieber, it's here today.
Numbers the Cleveland Indians have generated so far this season. They've played 7 games, 64 innings, Jess, 42 hits allowed in 64 innings, 8 walks, 86 strikeouts. Opponent's batting average of 184. Shane Bieber's unbelievable, but that whole staff right now has been absolutely killing it. A couple of quick hitters before you go. You have television. Edwin Diaz of the Mets last night. What an ugly inning. Look, the Mets got him at the time they traded for him. He was considered to be the best reliever in baseball. They tried to make it work last year. In spring training, they were hoping that he would get on top of the ball more. He'd throw a slider more effectively. After what I saw last night against the Red Sox, I got to believe that the Mets are going to say, you know what, we can't count on it anymore. It's a short season. We can't wait around. Jeurys Familia, by the way, looks fantastic. What do you see in Edwin Diaz?
Yeah, it's so mental, and it has been, and I think that's what's so hard. It's not like a, Mike Fultonavich situation where the stuff has just disappeared, the velocity's way down. I mean, for Edwin Diaz, it's there, and you see it, and then you see his glimpses. I mean, of course, like Mets fans, you don't focus on the times where he gets the big swing and miss, or he makes hitters still look stupid. And I think that's what we've seen since the start of last season. The hope that the Mets, and I think every Mets fan, right, always has, is it's going to come around. It's going to come around. I saw a note, though, since the start of last year, he's given up 36 runs in the 9th inning, which is the most in Major League Baseball. When you really wrap your mind around that, and that's when you need your closer, clearly, obviously, the most. But, like, when you want to be able to finish a game, and that trust is completely gone, and not just from, I think, his teammates and those around baseball, but in himself. It's almost like he gets to that 9th inning and something changes. Like, it's incredible to me. And I saw it with the home run that he gave up to Marcelo Ozuna last week, in one of his first appearances in that 9th inning, and I was like, here we go. It's like it just further tells that story for Edwin Diaz.
A telltale sign for me is how often he looks in the dugout after he throws a pitch that doesn't go well. That right, yeah, there to me is, boy, he's looking for that reaction, and he's feeling very defensive. 30 seconds, what'd you think of the Joe Kelly suspension?
I thought it was too much. I understand Major League Baseball did have to give a penalty, and there was intent. I mean, there's no doubt that Joe Kelly, in my opinion, 3-0 pitch, 96. I don't think he meant to throw it at the head of Bregman, but I think when you look at the facial expressions, everything that he did, Major League Baseball had to come down hard. I just feel like 8 games in a 60-game season, as we know, is equivalent to 21 games, seemed a little bit past the mark of even coming down hard, in my opinion. I think 4 games, 5 games would have been a ton. It's still getting into double digits is the significance of what they're trying to say and the message. But 8 games, and the appeal, I'm sure he'll end up with less than that.
All right, Jess, great to talk with you.
Thanks, Buster.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, was on the ESPN Daily podcast, and he talked about what's going on in baseball. He was asked about what the Marlins outbreak means for the rest of the baseball season.
I think we're going to have to see what happens over the next few days to a week. But I can tell you that a lot of good faith effort was put into this by the owners, by the player reps, by the players themselves. So I hope that this is just a temporary setback and that we can continue the season. But again, the most important thing is the safety and the welfare of the players and of the personnel associated and the players' family too. Because, you know, if you get infected, then you got to be concerned about spreading it.
He talked about the judgment he believes Major League Baseball will exercise.
If another outbreak, just like the Marlins example, were to occur, do you believe Major League Baseball should consider at that point suspending the remainder of its season?
I mean, obviously they will. I mean, the one thing that I really have to avoid with this, because sometimes I say things in response to a simple question and it gets taken out of context. And someone will say, Fauci says stop the season. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I have enough faith in the good judgment of the people who are making that decision that it seems likely that they will at least consider that as a possibility if you have multiple outbreaks. Whether or not they're going to do it, I think I'll leave it up to their good judgment.
He talked about how he will try to convince athletes to take the COVID vaccine.
And the solution to that is to carefully engage and reach out to the community using representatives that the community trusts to try and get them to understand the importance to their own personal health as well as the health of society in general of why it's so important to get vaccinated. Because traditionally, and we know this from a lot of experience, fundamentally vaccines are very, very safe interventions to prevent diseases, some of which are very serious. The only way we're going to ultimately nail down this pandemic so that it is something in the past and not something that we have to worry about continually is by a safe and effective vaccine. So as I said, I'm cautiously optimistic that we will get such a vaccine, but we also have to work on the community outreach to get people to accept it as something that's highly beneficial to them and not something that needs to be avoided.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. And Todd, I welcome you again this week, as I do every week. But I knew you'd be really excited because we got the return of Troy Farkas to the weekly quiz. What do you think?
You know, it's like a little family reunion over here, Buster. It's wonderful to have Troy back in the driver's seat here. If even for a week, we miss Taylor. But yeah, this is really, you know, I put together a special question for this week in honor of Troy, as a matter of fact.
And you know, while we like having Troy back, I do want to ratchet up the pressure because Troy, I'm sure, does not know the ebbs and flows of what's happening in the weekly quiz this year. Troy, I fell way behind, and I, you know, and then some of the listeners started to come at me on social media a little bit, and Taylor was sort of stoking that. So now the empire has been striking back, and the resistance is crumbling. So what's the current standings? What do you got, Todd?
So to this point, Taylor has 10 questions correct. You have 7. And that would including Dwayne Kuiper having sat in for you on a question, Buster. So I don't know how we count that. I think you just have to say you are closing the gap, but still down 10-7.
But the empire is striking back. There's no question about it. And I feel very good about it. Before we get to this week's quiz, and also in honor of Troy, we're going to be talking about T-Mobile Park in Seattle, formerly known as Safeco. What do you got on that ballpark?
Yeah, so T-Mobile Park holds up well, opened up in 1999. It's kind of hard to believe. It's kind of a strange mix of architecture as far as I'm concerned, Buster. It blends, you know, retro kitsch to some degree with a very industrial feel, that big roof, right? So it's unique in that respect. It has that roof, that unusual retractable roof. And it's a little bit different because it serves as an umbrella for the stadium, right? It just slides into place. It doesn't enclose the entire thing. So, you know, it's kind of perfect for Seattle in that respect. But when I think about T-Mobile Park, I think of all of the artwork there, right? They have an Art in the Park program. This is work created by artists from the Pacific Northwest. And you are hit with it the moment that you walk in that stadium. Your first impression in that rotunda is that of a bat chandelier. It's hanging above the entrance. And it's one of the coolest and most unique art features to me in any ballpark in the majors, Buster. For those who haven't seen it, it consists of 1,000 translucent bats, and they are lit from within. So it's really a signature statement. And again, it greets you the second you walk in the ballpark. And there are other things like that. And of course, now that it's T-Mobile, it's a very pink place, but you might not even notice that, Buster.
Yeah, I was going to say, this whole conversation really illuminates how your brain works differently than mine, Todd. Because I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. I have never even looked at the bat chandelier. I've never even noticed that. I didn't even know one existed until you just started talking about it. And you talked about the chandeliers. You know what I remember? In the press box, and I love what used to be known as Safeco Field. I've always felt like it's very underrated. And I've loved it there because when you go into the press box and you're getting ready to do a game, you know what you do? The windows that you put up actually pull up like a garage door. And I love that. And that's my favorite feature about T-Mobile Park.
See, and Buster, every week you talk about the utility of a particular stadium. Yep. And that is a little bit different. But it also speaks to the fact that your experience is different from most fans, as it should be. You probably enter in through some, you know, cloistered media entrance, and you go to you take an elevator or whatever it may be. But yeah, but getting back to the core discussion here, it's aged well. It's been improved upon. It has that huge video screen these days, and it's Seattle, which is a good city and a pretty good ballpark too.
If I may,
I can't wait to see the chandelier, Troy. Before I go, I would say now I'm like kind of looking forward to going back there because I never noticed that. I wasn't even aware of it, and I feel really stupid. All right, go ahead, Troy.
Yeah. So if I may add here, you know, Buster alluded to the personal connection here. I was born in Seattle. My family lived there for years, so Seattle is a special place in my heart. So Todd, based on what you described about the park, it sounds very trendy and innovative, much like the city, much like myself, of course. And Buster,
of course.
If I may add, last year we had a discussion, if you remember, on the podcast about best baseball cities, and I think you had said Seattle, and I ripped you because you love the air quality of Seattle, and I was like, who cares about air quality in a city? And then I found out that many, many people care about air quality in a city.
Nice. Just go ahead and repeat that for everyone to absorb that. What were you saying about the air quality last year?
I was saying, so someone had asked, I think a Bleacher Feed had asked, what your favorite park was, and you said Seattle right off the bat because of its air quality. I was like, who goes to a city and thinks, wow, this air is so nice, and puts that above the restaurants, the food scenes, the sprawling cities, the cool park, the cool city features? You think air quality.
And what's your handle on Twitter, just in case anyone wants to go at you, Troy?
It is at Troy _ Farkas, at me.
Well, yeah, can I interject for a moment? I think that 2020 has proven, if nothing else, that maybe we should be thinking a little bit more about air quality than we have in the past. So maybe Troy, I don't know. Maybe
Buster was ahead of his time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Prescient.
Well, yeah, that we knew that, okay? You know, anyway, before we go on to this week's quiz, we also want to talk about Kingdome and that ballpark. And Todd, what I'll always remember about, first off, it was lousy for a baseball field because it wasn't built for baseball. But man, it felt like pinball baseball, especially in the 90s when they had those crazy lineups where you had Griffey Jr. and Edgar and Alex Rodriguez. And, you know, it was a lot like Colorado in that the score could be 9-2 in the third inning, but you knew the Mariners are going to come back. And you knew a lot of runs were going to be scored. It was absolutely crazy. And I don't know if there was another ballpark quite like it. What do you remember about Kingdome?
Well, Buster, I have to say that of all, you know, I've been to, and we've talked about this, in the course of my long life here, something like 52 different Major League stadiums for MLB games. I never attended a game at Kingdome. So I feel like I missed
out on the better.
Yeah, probably for the better. But I do, in my mind, I think about having, you know, watched games on TV there. And there was a certain quality to the light. Here's another thing that you might not appreciate. But, you know, this is what makes the world go round. But you're right. The color of that turf and the light. And I cannot help but think in that case, of course, of the 1995 American League Division Series, Ken Griffey Jr. Sliding home, beating the Yankees. And that moment and that series probably gave birth, I think it's fair to say, to the successful bonding and construction of what we now know as T-Mobile Park.
And I saw the greatest catch I've ever seen in my life, the most fearless catch I ever saw in my life, Ken Griffey Jr. In 1995, going into the wall in right center field in Kingdome on a ball hit by Kevin Bass and shattering his wrist. To this day, it was like when he caught it, you just couldn't believe it. It was an amazing moment. All right, the Empire's ready. Strike back again. Let's get to this week's quiz.
Well, with Troy sitting in here this week on the boards, I have a Texas Rangers question.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
So
I saw that coming.
But it's a neutral thing. I think you both have a shot. So here we go. The Texas Rangers' new 2020 uniform set is noteworthy for the following reason. Is it A, they are the first uniforms in club history to feature script letter forms across the fronts? Is it B, they include the first powder blue uniforms in club history? Is it C, they include the word Rangers at home for the first time since 2008? Or is it D, they are the first uniforms in team history to include a sleeve patch that depicts their ballpark? So is it script letter forms, powder blue, the word Rangers for the first time since 2008, or the first uniforms in team history with a sleeve patch of their ballpark? Let's go.
Team resistance is in the lead, so Troy, you have to go first.
Oh, man. All right, so this is a tough question. Definitely neutral. Man, I'm stuck between B and D. I've gone process of elimination there between first powder blue and first time that they've had a sleeve with the ballpark. I'm going to guess here because I want it to be right. I want it to be first powder blue.
Golly. Man, oh man. So I was hoping that you would pick some, either A or C. I think, you know, my instinct is that it's D, but Troy, I'm worried about your knowledge of the dot. And this is where my color thing does come into effect, because I have my mind,
that's right,
my mind's eye about sort of where the colors have been in the past. I'm going to go D.
You're both wrong, because it is C.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
That was the one I had first crossed off.
Unbelievable. The team has worn Texas both at home and on the road for all these years. So it is the first time since 2008 that they're wearing Rangers across any of their uniforms.
The Empire still in position to strike back because Troy could not recognize the uniform as his favorite team. Todd, thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Welcome back, Troy.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster, final round of Bleacher Tweets for the week. The first one comes from Amy Chapman. Hi, Amy, at Amy R. Chapman. Given the new Phillies COVID cases and the previous ones with the Marlins, what do you think the tipping point is on canceling the season? Also, how about just scrapping it entirely, going into a bubble, and doing an NCAA-style playoff?
Yeah, I don't know, Troy, because you obviously connected with a lot of the listeners so well last year. I'm curious, did you get a chance to listen to the episode where you had so many of our regular Bleacher tweeters on come on and voice their concerns about what was going on with labor talks?
I did not.
Yeah, you got to go and find that. Yeah, Amy was on the podcast with us. She did a great job. I really believe that the tipping point ultimately is going to be someone getting really sick or, God forbid, worse. I think that is the Russian roulette they're playing. I think otherwise, it's, you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. They're going to work to make it happen. Look, in the spring, they brought up the idea of a bubble, and it didn't go anywhere. I think the sheer numbers of baseball players related to each team makes it more difficult than, say, the NBA or the NHL. And let's face it, there needs to be a cooperative relationship between Major League Baseball and the Players Association in order to make something like that happen, and there simply is not that in place. So they will have to go ahead with what they're doing now.
A follow-up Bleacher tweet from me, Buster. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it here. It is the Marlins, one of the lower-profile teams. If it were a more high-profile team, the Dodgers, Nationals, Yankees, that had the similar outbreak that the Marlins had, what do you think would happen?
I think it would be of greater concern. I think there'd be a lot more focus on it. I agree with the premise of your question that, you know, it's almost fortunate for baseball. It's a terrible thing to say because you got Marlins players who are sick. But in terms of pushing ahead with the product, I do think it's different. And you know, the best example I can give you is the comp. You remember when Buster Posey was hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, there had been some talk about, you know, possibly, you know, coming up with rules against home plate collisions. But when a superstar young catcher got hurt, it changed everything.
Right. Next one comes from Mitchell at Tigers of Detroit. Which of these 2020 rules do you see sticking in the next 5 years? A runner on second base to begin extra innings, 7-inning doubleheaders, or 30-man rosters?
Runner on second base in some form. It's been interesting to see the reaction to it. You know, old schoolers, you know, and some really experienced writers like Sam Miller have come out and said that they thought they were going to hate it, and they've actually enjoyed it. And I think it's going to have the support of the players, or a lot of the players anyway. I don't think relievers are wild about it. God forbid they come up with 30-man rosters. I can't stand that because you and I both know what that means, that we're going to have friggin' 17
games.
Relievers. Oh, my God.
Pumpkin Sox at Pumpkin Sox. What do you think about the news of Nick Markakis coming back to the Braves after opting out at the beginning of the restart?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. Nick Markakis is a very thoughtful person. He's a very caring person. He opted out after having a conversation with his friend, Freddie Freeman. Nick was concerned about his family, and he decided to opt out. And then as the Braves are coming back, and he saw that, you know, there was a lot of effort on the part of the players to try to make it work, and Freddie Freeman came back, then he started to feel better about it. And in watching the first couple games, he felt like he was letting down his teammates. And so he opts back in. From what I understand, the first conversation between Markakis and the Braves happened on opening day.
Final one, Kate Gentile at The Kate Gentile. If Dave Roberts' suspension was to hold him accountable for his players leaving the dugout, why was Dusty Baker only fined?
That is a question resonating within the Dodgers organization, because you had that field mic picking up Dusty Baker yelling at Joe Kelly during the course of that inning. And so a lot of the Dodger folks are, if you're talking about inciting an issue, they feel like Dusty should have been suspended as well.
Thank you for the tweets this morning. Very creative questions, thoughtful questions. I love it. Keep them coming every day, all throughout the weekend. Use the hashtag BleacherTweets.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jessica Mendoza and Todd Radom and to Troy. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend and stay safe. And remember, every day we must fight against hate and inequality based on skin color.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/PodCenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.